Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me for Progarchy. You've been a long-time supporter of our site, going back, I think, all the way to the beginning, so...
Yep, indeed. I remember it when Brad was at the helm, kind of thing, and, I think we missed out on the last album, Proxy. I don't think we did anything with you on that particular album, but there you go, that's the way it was.
Yeah, things are busy. Yeah, Brad's not with us anymore, but I keep in touch with him. I was one of his students at Hillsdale College back in several years ago, so that's how I got to know him and got involved with Progarchy. But
cool. All right, mate. Nice that you maybe to spend the time and to contact me anyway. Yes.
Oh yeah, well, definitely. We love your music and loving the new album. I also write for the Dutch Progressive Rock page, and I wrote a review of it for that'll be coming out hopefully within the next week. But it's a great album. Congratulations, and I know the fans are going to love it.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say. Glad to hear you. That means that that two of the reviews for the DPRP are going to be good. I suppose they usually do about five, don't they? But
I think there's
maybe they'll just do two and they'll both be good.
There's I looked on our back end website. We've got four that are going to be coming out. So, and I think it's not the next edition, but the edition after. So, should be coming out soon. But.
Have you read the other reviews?
I have not. No, I've not. I heard that they wanted you to check them out, so I don't know if they sent them all to you or.
No, they haven't sent me anything. Maybe there's a horrible one or something.
Oh, I doubt that.
But, no, we've had horrible reviews on there before.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, not from me.
Not from you. Don't worry about that anyway. Honorable reviews are sent to try me, not to try you. So,
that's part of the industry, I suppose. But
yes, it is.
So tell me a little bit about Auto Reconnaissance and the background of the album and kind of where the ideas for it grew out of.
Well, the background, I mean, this album was recorded before. Word coronavirus entered my life. When I say recorded, it was written before that. We were just hearing the news coming out of China at the beginning of the year when we were recording parts of it where we were together. So I was able to record the drums here with Steve and Theo came here, which basically means that all the keyboards, all the vocals, the drums and all the saxophones and flutes were recorded actually in this room on the microphone I'm talking to you with for the most part. So that was kind of nice to be able to do. And just after that, we started picking up the fact that there may be lockdowns and things. But in any case, Jonas Reingold was going to play all his bass parts in Austria anyway, because he was about to set off on the Steve Hackett World Tour. And Luke was always going to do his parts at his house anyway, because he's got his own studio there, and all these guitar amps are there, and it seemed pointless dragging them all the way up to Yorkshire. So we recorded it in our normal way, in fact slightly more together this time than any time in the past. You know, it would be us, isn't it? You know, the lockdown comes along and everybody has to find new ways to work with each other, and we find a way of actually doing it together, which was a bit bizarre. But you know, the background to the actual record is it was made in a fractious time in England. The end of the final debates on Brexit, as 3 years of arguing came to a close, and in very depressing times when England was busy shouting at itself, both sides of a bad debate, and much in the same way as I guess there's a big fight between the Republicans and the Democrats over your side of the water. And I wanted something that reflected that, but I didn't want something to be miserable. So I wanted to make an album that I think it was about really looking at the problems that we were in, but having a bright light visible at the end of the long tunnel that we were in at the time. And I think that's what I was trying to do with this record. And that's why the title is Auto Reconnaissance, which means looking at yourself. And that involves everybody looking at themselves and whole countries looking at themselves and working out our place in the world, really. I think that's what the focus of the album was, yeah.
That's interesting. It strikes me as like a progression and a departure from your last two albums, which were what struck me as being a little more overtly political, whereas the sense is this is almost you step taking a step back and analyzing almost the culture that's surrounding everything that you talked about in the last couple of albums.
I think you're probably right there. There's a certain amount you can be annoyed and a certain amount of protest you can make, after which you have to start philosophizing about it before you start to bore everybody to tears with your constant moaning. I kind of had to philosophize a bit more on this album. I think this album is more of a philosophical album than it's the previous two. And as I say, it looks more at our personal inner feelings rather than it looks at politics through those inner feelings rather than just at the politics and playing a blame game of any sort, I don't think there was any target on this album. I wasn't singing my anger to somebody. It was more of an album of, I'm prepared to work with this situation, are you, kind of thing. I guess that's the, yeah, you're right though. It's much more looking at the situation and, as I say, philosophizing about it, yeah.
Yeah, that's what, I really appreciated that about the album, and it kind of touches on just kind of, well, throughout there's this theme of like, connecting to humanity and where are we going, and, you get that on Tower of Babel for sure with this great reflection on being human and what does that look like in the 21st century, both with the politics of everything going on and with the technology that has interrupted our lives.
Yeah, well, the Tower of Babel, I think that many of the countries in the world that like to think of themselves as democracies, and I'm sorry, I've said this in a couple of other interviews, so it's not unique, I'm afraid. We think of ourselves as democracies. The US thinks of itself as a democracy, and we think of ourselves as a democracy over here. But I think that slowly but surely, we're having the wool pull, the carpet pulled from under our feet with that, because we're gradually becoming something more like technocracies, human beings are kind of becoming like avatars for their own paper trail. Now, if that sounds, if I try to explain that, it's like we've reached a point where our bank accounts and our personal data is probably worth more than us. And in many cases, people actually aren't interested in us. We are just the physical manifestation of a bank overdraft that is being paid or isn't being paid, of a loan that's being paid or not being paid, whether we're in good credit, bad credit, whether we've done a certain thing, whether we've licensed our car, whether we've paid our insurance bills, and how much money we've got, how much we've got available. Those are us now. And our own feelings are almost optional, and it's like somehow or other we're just becoming, the avatar or profile pic of our own accounts, and I feel that that's what Tower of Babel was trying to communicate, really, the fact that we are gradually dehumanizing ourselves, and we're allowing it to happen. And the really strange thing about it is we like it. That fascinates me, over.
Yeah, that's kind of the disturbing thing about it, is how addictive it is for so many people. The title of that track, obviously that's, coming straight from the Bible, and the story of God confusing the languages of everyone and spreading people throughout the earth. Why did you choose that as the title?
Because I feel that, you know, we are, the language is changing, and we are realizing that this technological language, this ones and zeros business, that it's instant. We are learning that one language and building that building that tower to heaven, if you like. We are becoming, we're making our own god of technology, really. I mean, you must understand that I'm a real big fan of technology. I'm a real big fan of it. I absolutely love the stuff. I wouldn't be able to make my music without it. But what I want to be is I want to be the master of technology. I do not want it to be my master. And I think that, essentially there is something about this that does strike me as, the world's becoming all powerful with this, I see that were the internet to suddenly disappear, be brought down an electromagnetic pulse, either weapon or a big solar flare that took the Earth, computer system offline for a protracted period of time, would be like casting the nations all over the Earth and removing all their languages. I mean, how on earth would we cope at the moment if that were to happen? I know that we've had a couple of internet outages in our house in the past 2 weeks, and it was actually a point where I couldn't work out how to switch the bedroom light off. That's how complicated it's become. Over. I say over. It's because I'm a radio operator. I do amateur radio.
Okay.
I'm talking in front of a microphone, and it's just like being on my amateur radio kit, my CB, and I say over at the end. it's just a habit, I'm afraid.
That's funny. I didn't know you did that as a hobby. That's pretty cool.
But that's something I've been into since I was a kid. As in the lyric of the song, there's a bit that says it. When I was a boy, I took radios to pieces just to see them. That's true, and I've been doing it ever since. And I'm a big radio enthusiast. Yeah.
Well, that's funny. I've got in my living room an RCA radio built in 1934 that's been restored. It doesn't do, I can't transmit with it, but it does AM, shortwave, and all that stuff. So I like listening to radio. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a lovely thing to do. It's a great medium. I've always liked radio. Yeah.
The song "Jinxed in Jersey." It kind of drew me back to your 2015 album "Spark in the Ether." I loved it. Just this kind of you going on this journey in search of the Statue of Liberty and kind of discovering urban America along the way. I just got to ask: was this based on an actual event that happened to you?
Yes, it is.
that's what I figured. It sounded so detailed and precise that I'm like, this. He's just telling us a story.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know an Anglophile is somebody who is interested in England, and I guess I'm the same for the USA. I don't know what the word is, but an Americanophile or whatever. So you're right, the celluloid road, which is that's an imaginary trip through America through the vehicle of films, whereas this is my own trip. I was there on tour. It was in October 2017. We'd just done the Progstock Festival in New Jersey, and we had a couple of days to kill in the New York region before we headed off to Chicago to do a date there. And we checked into a cheaper hotel so we could just spend a couple of days bumming about. And the rest of the guys in the band wanted a day off, and I thought, right, well, I want to go for a walk. I'm a kind of guy, I don't like using GPSs and things like that. I just like to set off and go, and I follow the sun, basically. I worked out, thought, right, where's the Statue of Liberty? It's going to be over there, because that's south, and we're north of it. So I just kind of headed off and promptly headed down the wrong side of the Hudson Bay and ended up walking through Jersey City instead of New York City. So I had a completely different experience, and I'm really glad that I did, because it was, you know, really amazing, eye-opening, and wonderful experience. Besides which, the next day we all piled into New York anyway, so I got the best of both worlds, and without that mistake, I'd have missed this chance to see, you know, a much more gritty, realistic, you know, side of, like you say, urban America, and you know, it was a very valuable experience for me. Yeah.
It reminded me almost of King Crimson and like the early 80s and some of the stuff they did. I don't know why it struck me that way, but it's one of my favorite tracks on the album. And it's an interesting juxtaposition with Lie Back and Think of England, because you've got these two, you know, rather dissimilar countries, but similar in a lot of ways as well, and kind of looking at the two. And, you know, urban life in the UK, I think, is quite a bit different than it is in America.
We have our beautiful cities, and we have our gritty cities too, you know. I mean, make no mistake, I never see America as being similar to England. In fact, I find it to be a very, very different place. I know we're united by a language, of course, I find Germany and France are, you know, a lot more like England than America is. And this is not to say anything bad about America, because I love the place, but it's an altogether different experience. The speed of life, the way people, when people act, and you know, the enormous amount of emphasis that's placed on religion in America, which you know, is way, way, way bigger than we have in France or Germany or England or most European countries, to be honest.
Right.
You know, it's you know, the religious sort of like influence in America is more like you'd experience in somewhere like India. So, you know, it's quite a big thing. Is that, you know, and it's, you can see it and feel it. And and of course, you know, the style of the buildings, the hugeness of the place, you know, it feels like a very, very different world. It's a world I very much enjoy visiting and being part of, and I really get off on it, actually. So I've visited, you know, Colorado and the New York area, Philadelphia, San Francisco. I've seen some of the beautiful sights of the California parks, like Yosemite, as Trump calls it, and I've been to Lake Tahoe and Sacramento, places like that. You know, I've had an amazing time there, and of course, you know, as I commented in the Celluloid Road, I already know America, because you've been selling me it since I was a little kid with the TV programs. You know, because we see it every day. You know, and I've been watching Americans having adventures since the days of Cannon, Starsky and Hutch and Kojak, you know. So all big part of my life.
Well, when I went to, back in 2015, I spent a month over in England doing some archival research in the Midlands, and I was struck, just, you know, flipping channels on TV in my bed and breakfast in the evenings, just almost all the channels, maybe not all of them, but there were so many of them, it was just all old American television shows from like the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, and it was interesting how ubiquitous that was, like you said, in TV, but the actual country itself and the day-to-day is so drastically different.
Oh, completely different. You know, there's... I still find that, you know, I would say that, you know, I don't watch much TV anymore, to be honest, but we do kind of, myself and my partner Sally, we do kind of watch a program every day, one TV program a day. And I would say that 80% of the time we choose a production from your side of the water, be that Canada or the USA. Then it's 80% of our viewing. We tend to find that the production values are higher, that it generally looks, feels better. You know, it just feels like, the whole point of putting the TV on is to escape, just escape for a little bit. Now, in Britain, it's very, very popular to watch people who are in the same situation as you, to just put on TV and see somebody else's kitchen and somebody else's living room and things. And, you know, I don't just want to see somebody else's living room. I want to see a different world. And, you know, that's why I watch the TV in much the same way as I listen to music. I want to, you know, just leave this place for a little while and make it all the better to come back to. I do like that. I like watching a lot of Scandinavian stuff. Never been a big fan of British telly. You know, it's very, very kind of slow, laborious, usually far too involved in sort of like... pedestrian things, you can't have a cop series in England without the cop's family involved in it, and problems with the kids and things like that, and who's going to pick the kids up from school if you're going to be investigating a murder, all that kind of stuff. I just find it a turn off. I'd rather get on with it and have a bit of excitement. So I like everything from your 24s and your designated survivors, which are just exaggerated, nonsense that I like, through to some really good serious stuff I've seen, and Canada's really come into it, on the TV side of things. They're making some great TV in that part of the world too. So, I'm a big fan.
Well, it seems like British television, it's so much of it is satirical, and I don't know if it's somewhat that way in at least British progressive rock, although with your music, I've always felt like it's more of a critique. When I listen to your music, I think of you as like you said, very philosophical, but as a critic of what's going on, and a critic of culture, rather than a satire of it.
I do satire from time to time, but most of the time sometimes I'm tongue in cheek, sometimes I'm sarcastic in the lyrics, but I'm totally behind the music and the kind of music we play. I've never sort of done much kind of what we'd call piss taking out of progressive rock music here. I'd be cutting my nose to spite my face there, really. I adore this music. I've been brought up on it, and it's one area where, of course, I think Britain, was an amazing force in the world in this particular genre of music, and in many others. We've all had our shares on the. The Americans made some of the best jazz fusion music I've ever heard, and of course you've had some great prog rock bands too. People like Salem Hill and Discipline and Kansas, of course, Boxbeard, amazing groups. That I've always enjoyed. And of course, your great lost hero Kevin Gilman, the Italians too. They made amazing music. And of course the Swedes, it's gone round the world now as progressive rock music, and the most interesting stuff I've been listening to recently is out of Argentina. A band called Alas, who I discovered recently. They were a 70s band, but my goodness me, how I ever missed that. They would have been my favourite band back in the day. I really think they would. I can't stop listening to them, actually. And they only made 3 albums, which is a shame. But, fantastic group.
When you mentioned the jazz fusion, I hear that influence all throughout this album. And there's people doing that in progressive rock, but it's not as, it's not super common. And that's one of the things I love about the Tangent is that influence. And it always strikes me as being very fresh, and it has the sort of... improvisational aspect to it.
I think that really was it for me, because, like, you know, by the time I became involved in straight out 100% full-blooded progressive rock music again, that was when, by the time the Tangent started, that's in 2002. By then I'd seen the whole of the first wave of progressive rock music, then the 80s bunch, and then I'd seen the 90s people as far, you know, so I'd been listening to the third wave for about a decade. And I was thinking, well, if I'm actually going to do progressive rock music, you know, what is it I want to do? And, you know, and it occurred to me that the one reason why I'd never bought into that second wave of progressive rock music, you know, I just ignored it. I heard it. I kind of laughed at it, I have to say. You know, the Marillions, the IQs, the Palaces, and all those people. The reason why, I just kind of thought it was sort of like, I'm not offending these bands, because, you know, a lot of them have done some really good stuff since, but when I first heard it, I kind of thought, what I'm hearing is like a retread of what happened in the 1970s, except it's a heck of a lot simpler. And, you know, the jazz was gone, and the rock and roll had gone as well. This stuff wasn't rocking. It was all about the big, grandiose bits. It was about the comfortably numbs and the afterglow and all the sort of big, ponderous, majestic pieces, and the big keyboards, pads, and everything. And it wasn't about the counterpoint flying about and the jazz stuff. And then, so when I first heard Spock's Beard and Flower Kings, I was delighted that they'd got a lot of that counterpoint back in it. And I just thought to myself, well, I want to form a progressive rock band then, and what do I want it to be? I thought, number one, I want it to sound English. And number two, I want it, because at the time, you know, hey, it was pretty bad, was this? The best progressive rock music in the world was coming from America and from Sweden. Well, I kind of thought, we can't have this. we're being beaten at our own game. So, you know, I decided to put the jazz stuff back in. Now, you know, there are lots of things that I've done which have actually commercially hurt the Tangent, because, you know, the fact is that jazz is not, you know, the jazz stuff puts people off, and the politics puts people off. But, you know, I kind of thought, you know, what am I doing here? Am I trying to make money, or am I trying to make music? And I thought, if you want to make money, Andy, do something else. If you want to make music, do this. And that's what I did. I decided to do what I wanted to do, what my dream was, and see if anybody else liked it. As it happens, they did. I got a career out of it. I've now been running the Tangent for 18 years, and the record company are still putting out my records, and I'm very happy about that. It doesn't make me into a rich man, but it means I can do it, and I can spend my time doing it. That's what I do for a living. I make these records. It ain't comfortable, but it's fun, and if I get comfortable, I get bored. So I think that's, it's all worked out for the best in that respect, Owen.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you said you wanted it to be distinctively English, but then throughout the history of the band, you've had people that, you know, the band members are not just from England, you know, all around. You know, Jonas is from Sweden, and, you know, when at the beginning, Roina, he was, you know, from Sweden as well, and there's someone else in the band that's from Europe, right? In your current lineup, correct? Mainland Europe, I should say.
Well, yes. I mean, basically, it's all the UK plus Jonas, who are currently Swedish but living in Austria. So, all the rest of us live in the UK. Steve lives in Wales, part of the UK. And we're all on this same island, basically, except for Jonas now. The thing is that it was actually quite difficult to you know, when I formed the Tangent and came up with the idea from it, I realised that, you know, the UK had not been producing musicians of the kind of calibre and type you needed to be able to play the music I wanted to do. And I would have found it very hard in 2002 to be able to put a band together who could play the music I wanted to do. It doesn't mean they weren't good musicians. They were good musicians, but they didn't have the sort of knowledge of what I wanted to do. Mm. And the Flower Kings came as a ready-made, organized set of people who understood what I was about. You know, they knew all the Yes references, they knew all, you know, and they knew about Chick Corea and all that kind of stuff, and they were very into their jazz. So that was a very, very nice way for me to be able to get started, using essentially the rhythm section and guitarist of the Flower Kings right from and the first two records. And of course, you know, once Roiner left the band, you know, I realized now is I either stop or I continue and make the records without him. And of course, that's what we had to do. I got the support of the record company, and you know, they were behind me all the way. And you know, I think that when Roiner left, that was it. I kind of sort of thought, right, I've got to lose that crutch of the Flower Kings. Now Roiner's gone, there's no point in me making records that sound like them. I have to make my records that sound like me. And it took a little while to develop that and get our own strain. But I think now that the Flower Kings and the Tangent make records that sound completely different to each other, right, and I think that's what I wanted, and I think it's what Roiner would have wanted me to do. So, you know, that's it all worked out for the best in the end.
So, and this current lineup, has it been, and it's from the same as the last album, correct? I don't know if about the album before that.
Yeah, I mean, really, to be honest, it goes back. You know, when you actually look at it, the band has been famous for having a really, really tortured lineup. But when you actually look at it, Jonas and I have been together since the first album, yeah?
Right.
Theo's been with the band since the second album. Luke joined us in 2010. That's 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And those four people have been on the last four albums together. You know, that goes back as Spark in the Ether in 2014. We added a drummer in 2017 who's become, so, you know, it's been a pretty constant, we've had many people playing small parts for a small time, but we've had these people have been, you know, a fairly constant figure throughout the band's career, really. So, you know, Luke's been involved for more than half the band's time together. So, you know, we don't think of him as being new anymore. You know, he's part of the nuts and bolts of how this band is glued together. You know, I mean, you know, it started to feel like a band a long time ago to me. Yeah.
And, so what does the writing process look like? I mean, since you've had a kind of a cohesive band for a while, did that change over the years? And specifically on this album, what did that look like, both for musically and lyrically?
Well, I have a pretty bizarre way of writing. The thing is that this does not come easily to me in terms of... you know, I don't know how it works for Neil Morse either, but, like, you know, Neil Morse seems to be able to write a song a minute, you know, and they're all really good, whereas I have to kind of, like, mess about for ages, and I have a process where I think that the most... Sorry, I'm just yawning, which is nothing to do with the interview, it's just to do with all the other stuff I've done today, but the main thing is... I need to know what I'm going to sing about first, you know. I need to get an idea, and when I've got something in my head that's bugging me, you know, and I want to get something about it, I just sit there and think about this idea, and then I'll start playing the piano whilst I'm thinking about it, and just see where the improvisation takes me, and I'll usually end up recording that, you know, just as a rough recording, and just, what did I play that? Yeah, that works, yeah, I can see how that fits, and then I'll just take the little bits of maybe an hour's of improvisation and find one little bit in it, think, yeah, that's where this song belongs here. And then I'll develop that a little bit and eventually, of course, turn it into a piece of music and gradually move it around, then start bringing in the, you know, the formulas and tricks of songwriting that I know, well, this needs to go here, then we need a recurrence of that theme, then the bass needs to do this, and then gradually build it all up. And by the time I've built it up, I don't have to write the lyrics down. I don't have to write them because, you know, I already know what they are. It's strange, you know, because I've been thinking about the topic since I started, since the whole thing began. I've been thinking of the topic, you know. It doesn't matter whether that's Brexit or whether it's school or whether it's a love song. By the time I actually come to putting the vocals on, somehow I already know what the lyrics are. And so the first time they ever get written down nowadays is when I'm writing them down for the record sleeve. it's all a fairly natural process, but it is time consuming, you know, and back in the day, bands used to release albums every year, sometimes two a year. People think the tangents are fast now, but, you know, it's about once every 2 years for us and sometimes once every three. So, you know, it's not as quick as some people think it is. No.
Well, that's fascinating. So you don't write down the vocals before you record them. You just kind of, you already have them in your mind, and then when you actually do the recording, they just come from the work that you've been doing over the however long you've been working on the project?
It's a case of I just set the microphone up and I kind of know within inside me. I don't have the lyrics written in my head. I just know what I want to say and, you know, it just comes out. And, you know, that's it. And that's what you hear. I mean, you know, the story of me meeting the cop in Jinxton, Jersey, well, that's a spoken section anyway, but yeah. That's completely free form. That was all just done in one take, the whole of that story, including the guy including his accent and everything. And you can actually hear me making a couple of mistakes with the panning control, because I push it to the left when it's the cop speaking, and push it to the right when it's me speaking, and you can occasionally hear I miss it, and it starts off in the middle and it suddenly jerks to the left. That's because I was doing it live in the studio, just talking and telling the story. That particular song, so I just, you know, I asked my guy, I asked the concierge if she'd help me. And then, you know, I just knew to find the best way to walk to the Statue of Liberty, and it just fits in. And of course, you know, just like any singer makes a mistake, sometimes I make a mistake, which is, you know, the words didn't rhyme, didn't sound very good. Then I go back and just do it again until it does, just like any other singer, except I'm writing the words at the same time. And I think this gives it I think what it really does, more than anything, is that, to me, the way that, you know, you can get singers who are a heck of a lot better than me, because I'm not a great singer, but what I am is a good speaker. And I think the way I speak my songs, you know, even when I'm singing, because when you're singing, you're still speaking. And I think that when you're reading from a piece of paper, you always sound different from how you are when you're just speaking. Because, you know, hey, you know, we haven't written down any of this, but if I suddenly started reading you an answer, you'd tell straight away he's reading that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd check. And believe it or not, I can tell you from experience that if you're singing, reading the sheet, it sounds different from how you do if you're just singing what you feel. I don't know how many other people have discovered this technique, but I find that I sound a lot, lot better, a lot more convincing if the lyrics aren't written down and I'm just singing what I want to sing at that moment. Yeah.
Well, I think it lends a sort of freshness to it, and then as well as passion. Like, Lie Back and Think of England, you know, your voice reaches a pretty powerful source of passion. because I can tell you love your country and you care about it, and you're frustrated, you know, as the whole world is with how things are going. And I don't think you'd be able to get that if you had written it down. It's that it wouldn't be the same. You know, you might have had the passion when you wrote it, but that's not the same as then when you go to record it. So if you're doing both at the same time, it's a lot more genuine, I feel.
You're absolutely right there. That particular song never have happened if I'd had to write it down. If I go back to my old, when I go back to my old pieces from, you know, before the album Com, for example, when the first one I properly did this technique was called Le Sacre de Travail, and all the albums before that, when I hear them, I can hear, I'm reading, I can just tell, and you know, and it just sounds so much freer since I stopped. And of course, I'm getting better at doing it. So, plus the fact that I gave up smoking 5 years ago, and it's beginning to help me sing better. So, okay. You know, I think that's, you know, obviously helping. But yeah, I just do it my own way, my friend. That's it. You know, I just had to develop my own techniques because I had music lessons when I was very, very young, but I don't read music. I don't understand a lot of the theory and anything about how to write it down. Or I know how to record it and I know how to play it, but I don't know. My friends in the band, they're always talking in this sort of language that I don't even understand about, you know, scales and Lydian modes and different chord shapes and inversions. I know what they're talking about, but I don't understand it, and I just have to nod my head politely and say okay, and then go away and think, what the hell does that mean? everything I do is kind of self-taught, really. I had to take some piano exams when I was a kid, I had to play when you do those exams, you have to play a piece to an examiner, and you have the music in front of you, and you play it, and you've had a chance to practice it, of course, and I just couldn't work out how to do it, so I got a record of it and learnt it from the record by ear, and just thought, okay, so I said, this is how you do it, and so I got there to my exam and put the music on the stand in front of me to pretend I was reading the music, but of course just played it, you know, because I'd learnt it from the record, because honestly, I really don't know what it's all about, really. To me, it's just music, and I just seem to be able to do it without having to learn it, I guess. I would probably be a lot better if I was, you know, if I could be bothered to sit down and study it. Because, like, you know, my friends have all studied it. But that's, you know, it just didn't work for me that way, okay?
Well, whatever you're doing is clearly working for you, so. So is the music written, or not written, like, is it recorded when you go and do your vocals, or is it kind of like in the middle of the process that you do that and then you shape the music around your vocal lines that you've recorded?
Yes, I think it's what you have to do is take one step forward, two steps back, you know. One step forward is like, okay, you start off with your idea, you think about it, you get a little bit that's nice and you think, okay, how could that work? Then you develop it, then you put some vocals on and see what the vocals added to it, and then you alter what you'd written to start with to go with the vocals, and then you maybe adjust the vocals a bit to go with what you've just done, and you keep going backwards and forwards until, you know, you finally got what you wanted to be there in the first place. So, you know, technology really helps me be able to do that, you know. And it's just got better over time. I used to do it on tape recorders back in the 80s, and now I do it on computers now, and computers are way better. So, much better way of recording.
We've come full circle talking about technology, and it's an example of using technology as a tool rather than the technology using you as a tool.
Absolutely correct, yes. Yeah, totally agree.
Well, thanks so much for your time. Is there anything else you want to tell the world about auto reconnaissance?
Not really. I actually, you know, I'm very, very pleased with it, I have to say. I think that one of the good things about it was that I was able to, you know, because of coronavirus, actually, it meant that Luke Machin had a bit of work cancelled that he would have been doing for other people, and I was able to get him involved in the production more.
Okay.
Although on this album we did produce it together, I think that the final sound, the final quality of sound, a lot of it has to be put down to him, because he actually performed the final mix, and I have to say I think it's a stunning piece of work that he did. It really has made our record. I think the overall sound of the record has taken a jump up on this one, and it's I'm very pleased with that. So yeah, it's been a lovely process, and actually, you know, despite all the odds and all the chaos in the world that's happened, I think this has been the most enjoyable album we've ever made together. You know, and I was so happy to make it with exactly the same people as we made the last one with, you know. And still be able to develop, because it doesn't just sound like Proxy Part 2, it's a different animal, but with the same people. And I think that demonstrates the versatility and the flexibility of the people I'm working with. I really value that.
Yeah, I mean, the album sounds absolutely gorgeous. It's great. I think it is a step up for you guys, and I've absolutely loved it. I've listened to it probably, I don't know, like 10 times or something, and that's before it's even been released. So it sounds fantastic, and there's so much more with repeated listens. You catch up on both things lyrically and musically that you missed before, and it's just great. So.
Okay, well that's good. Well, look, the other thing I need to do is to thank you very much for taking the time to do this. And as I tell everybody, you guys who do the interviews and do the articles and the reviews and stuff like that, you are just as important as we are, because you tell the world about us. And if you didn't, nobody would know we were here. So thank you very much for your part in doing it. And particularly as you've written a nice review in the DPRP. I look forward to reading it, my friend. Yeah.
Oh, thanks very much. That's very kind of you. But without you guys, we wouldn't have anything to write about. So.
That's it. It's a symbiotic relationship, and you know, we both need each other to go along. So I reckon that more of us should say thank you to you guys. So there you go.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. It means a lot. All right, well, thanks so much for your time. I'll let you carry on with your evening.
Thank you very much, sir. Take care, and I'll look forward to reading the interview and the review. Yeah, all right.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
See you later, Brian. Thanks for your time. Take care. Very best wishes to you and your family. Bye.
To you as well. Bye.